Welcome everyone to this session, and I'm super happy to be talking with Misty Williams. Hi, Misty.
Hello, great to be here.
So we're going to be talking about sleep, and I think sleep's a really interesting topic because when we have trauma and we have challenges in our life, often it affects our sleep, but when we don't sleep, often it's quite traumatic. So there's a sort of, I thought it was a really interesting sort of kind of interconnectedness here. Before we come into Misty's story, let me just give a little bit of her background and bio. So Misty Williams spent years struggling to reclaim her health and vitality after surgery to remove an ovarian cyst. Life-threatening complications and an endometriosis diagnosis sent her into a brain fog and fatigue tailspin. The doctor told her that the only remedies for her issues were drugs and surgeries, that her lab tests were normal, and she could Google to learn more about what was happening to her body. At 35 years old, Misty embarked on the fight for her quality of life, enduring many more challenges on her road to healing, including an unexplained 45-pound weight gain, debilitating brain fog, fatigue, hyperthyroidism, and premature ovarian failure. She founded HealingRosie.com to provide high-performing women with the resources and community to successfully confront the unexpected chronic health issues that women often experience as they age. And she recently hosted the very successful Your Best Sleep Ever online summit. So, Misty, we've given a bit of a tease there of some of your story, but I know that your interest in the area with sleep was not a chosen path in life. It was a path that somewhat that chose you. So let's back up a little bit and tell us a bit about how this all unfolded for you.
Yeah, you're right. I actually got a chill whenever you said that. I think probably my entire path wasn't one that I chose. And I know that there's many people that can relate to that. But my journey started pretty benignly. Actually, I went in to ask my doctor to check my fertility because I was 35 years old and was contemplating, you know, motherhood, and I'm getting older and what's going on in my body. And, you know, the story of the surgery and complications and everything is a pretty long story. What ended up happening that really ties into this conversation is they found a cyst. I went in for surgery. On the way out of the surgery, they stitched up part of my small intestine, which wasn't supposed to happen. And I spent 6 days not able to keep food or water down. Finally, went into the emergency room. They did a follow-up surgery, sent me home after, and I didn't sleep for 6 days, 144 hours with not a wink of sleep. And as it turns out, that very traumatic beginning actually wasn't the most traumatic thing that happened to me. Well, most traumatic.
before we come to that, what is it like to not sleep for 6 days? I mean,
it's terrible.
Yeah.
You think you're losing your mind. It's not normal. It's not a normal thing to happen. So to lay in bed all night and to like the next day come and you haven't slept it's weird. You know, if that's never happened to you, it's that in itself is very disconcerting. But then to go through the next day and then go to bed again and it happened again, that starts messing with a sane mind. But over time, every single day, you're actually losing a little bit of your sanity because your brain isn't resetting. It's not organizing everything that happened for the day. Your body isn't resting. So this compounded for me. And by the end, I was like weepy. I was a little delusional. I couldn't focus on anything. I wasn't doing any work for clients. I have had a marketing agency since I was 26 years old. So it's very scary to be in that situation, knowing that you're not functioning and you don't know why it's happening. And no one told you this was a possibility. So it was awful. It's a form of torture in wartime to sleep deprive people. So,
and it works. You know,
I mean, it does. It was really scary. I actually connected the dots. I had 6 days of not being able to keep down food or water and 6 days of not sleeping. I just connected the dots on that. This happened 10 years ago, but I do think there's something that happens in the body where this just massive buildup of cortisol, eventually just overthrows your entire system. And I wasn't making any sleep hormones at all. And my body couldn't, it's like, what do we even do with all this cortisol? You know, my liver is taxed, and that wasn't the only thing the buildup of cortisol wasn't the only trauma I was dealing with. You know, I also had all this stuff going on in my body. So that was a very scary time for sure. What's been worse for me though, is a couple of years later, they improperly drilled mercury from my teeth. And that crashed my hormones, methylation, which is how your body detoxifies. And I've had so many health issues from that, that I've learned, I feel like I kind of, they were Humpty Dumpty got patched together again, but Humpty Dumpty has never been the same. That's how I feel from the mercury toxicity, because even with doing deep work that is supposed to heal your hormones, for me, my hormones are not coming back.
Right,
and right. The professionals that I'm working with, some of the best experts in the world, I'm very fortunate to know, are all kind of saying they may not. So that's a very devastating thing. But you know, it came up in my journey, this issue of trauma that you're, you know, doing this wonderful summit on, because there's a lot of trauma that I'd endured as a kid that I didn't think of as trauma. It was just my life as a child, you know, all the extra responsibility. At 7 years old, I'm watching my siblings while my parents are out running their errands. And I was always uber responsible at home. And there's just a lot of things that I didn't think of as trauma, being an overly responsible person. I'm an entrepreneur starting at 25. You know, I thought of this as just normal life. Yeah. And, you know, as we get older and our body is less resilient for a variety of reasons, we don't bounce back and spring back, and we realize, oh, all these things that we've kind of carried for so long and just dealt with, as our body isn't 20 years old anymore, it becomes a more obvious challenge that we have to confront. And so for me, my healing journey has had two paths. It's had the path of functional medicine, and I love lab work and tracking and measuring and what's happening and what's actually that whole side. But it's also had this very spiritual side where I learned that the way that I was living my life was actually not good for me.
Yes,
it wasn't good for me to constantly be in a space where I'm the giver of support to everyone else, but I don't have any inroads coming to me offering support. And that's not because people in my life were selfish and hateful. That's because I was conditioned from a very young age to not have needs. Because when you're 7 years old and your family is counting on you to do really adult things, you can't have a seven-year-old's need. If you're the person taking care of everybody else, who's going to take care of you at that age? So I just had this way of being in the world that was overly responsible, and I was invisible to myself.
Yes.
You know? And so I spent probably the last 5 or 6 years of that 10-year journey, the recent past, really confronting that dimension. You know, what is it about my belief that I am not worthy of being seen and supported like I give to everyone else in my life? And I've been deeply impacted by the work of people like Brené Brown and Alison Armstrong. I mean, like, just revolutionary. I remember watching Brené's TED Talk for the first time. It was about 6 years ago, on vulnerability.
Yes.
And feeling confronted, because I saw myself in her story. Like, everyone else could be vulnerable with me, but I had really no place that I could go and be vulnerable. And it's my own creation, you know? And even then, like, to kind of logically think, why is it like this? And there could be this tendency to blame and put it out there, like something out there did it. But, you know, as you peel back those layers, it's just a way of being in the world, and we can shift and change. But, you know, all of this has come together in my own journey. And as you can imagine, I've had many layers of confronting my own sleep, you know, from having that experience where I wasn't sleeping at all to having the mercury fillings improperly drilled from my teeth, which completely shut down hormone production across the board for me. And for women, especially when we don't have our hormones, we don't sleep.
Yes.
And this is a very, very chronic thing for women as they enter midlife, enter into perimenopause. You know, they have all these troubles sleeping, and it's due to hormone depletion. But what's depleting our hormones? It's a variety of stressful situations, including trauma. And trauma is a big word. There's like internal trauma and external trauma and body trauma, and, you know.
But I think, yeah, and I think often how how trauma is created is sort of a very similar path to how sleep issues are created, because it's rarely one thing. It's like, you know, it's people think about, it's the final straw that breaks the camel's back. Well, what are all those straws beforehand? Or what are all those loads on a boat? And if we look at your story from some traumas being younger, and often also when we experience trauma in childhood, we just know that as normal. So we don't label it as trauma. We don't recognize that the way that we've learned to be in the world is problematic. That's just how we know ourselves. That's what we know. So it's for sleep to go out of balance, rarely is it one single thing. It's, as you described, it's a combination of factors. And the trigger of the surgery was perhaps the final few straws, but it sounds like much of that burden had been created prior to that.
Well, there was so many things that I didn't know were sleep issues, to your point, that I was having in my life. I would say my sleep was fine, but I wasn't going to bed until 2 a.m. And ever from 18 to 35, there probably wasn't a single time that I went to bed before. I was just a chronic night owl, and that was just my routine. So there's that. And I don't remember, even in high school, ever waking up feeling refreshed in the morning. Like, never. I didn't know waking up feeling refreshed was a thing. after my surgery, I worked with a chiropractor because all my doctors were, you know, obviously telling me that my labs are normal and things are fine. And I'm like, not functioning, brain fog, no energy. I've got to look alternative, you know, somewhere else. And the first thing this chiropractor asked me was, how's your sleep? And that was like, that's kind of the first big thing that I had to work on in my own healing. Because when I told him that I didn't go to sleep until 2 a.m. and that I slept typically until 9 or 10. But then I woke up feeling like I'd been hit by a Mack truck. He started like chastising me immediately. Like, this is not, if you want your body to heal, you are going to have to change this pattern. And I was desperate at this point. Like, if he would have come to me at a time in my life when I hadn't just recently experienced all this trauma and said, Misty, you really should do this for your health, it probably would have just rolled right off of me, you know? But in this situation, I was very desperate and realized that I had a lot of challenges with my sleep that I didn't know were there, that certainly what I was experiencing at that point in my life and what was to come were only going to exacerbate my sleep challenges. So I took it on early, this whole thing with sleep, and have been through many layers of resolving my sleep issues. And we can talk about some of that if you'd like, but there's not a path. You know, there's so many, that's why I did an entire summit on this because, and after the summit's over, like, I just got emails from several men who are like, you know, what's affecting my sleep is enlarged prostate. The enlarged prostate keeps me from being able to sleep through the night. And this is why I think we're called grumpy old men as we get older. And like, I'm just thinking there's as big of a talk. I did over 40 interviews and there's still more to talk about. So yeah, it's very, very big. Very big.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's also, it's sort of one of those ones that there can sometimes be quite a lot of kind of secrecy around it. I think a lot of people struggle with sleep and either feel ashamed about it or they just think, well, that's sort of how they are. And I think there's something about conversations like this that people sort of go, wow, that's sort of me as well. I don't go to bed till 2 a.m. Or it's the opposite. Someone's like, well, I'm always sort of up at like 4 or 5 in the morning. And they sort of look at it and go, I'm not getting enough sleep. And, you know, the impact of not having enough sleep on everything in the body, like, from energy to brain function to ability to heal and recover from anything, it's like sleep is critical.
It's so critical.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I sort of introduced at the top as well, I think this relationship between sleep and trauma is a really interesting one, because the more we don't sleep, that's traumatic, but also trauma has a big impact on our ability to sleep.
There is a little model I just want to throw in here that can kind of help people wrap their head around this, because there are a lot of layers to this conversation, but there is a way to simplify it just for the purpose of understanding. And that is, there's one reason that we get sick and there's one reason we don't sleep. And that reason is stress.
Yes.
And the cortisol response. Now, how that plays out is very, very multifaceted, but that's the reason. So we could talk about all the inner stress, and obviously I had all these things happen with my body. That's stress. Trauma is clearly stress. You know, whatever's going on in your life, in your relationships, is stress. even external things happening, you know, mercury filling being improperly removed is stress. Like everything is stress and it creates a cortisol response, and that cortisol response creates a cascade of effects in the body. And so when you're thinking about like, why is sleep impacted? It's really because of that cortisol response that your sleep is impacted. I mean, when your body makes sleep hormones, there's a way that your hormones naturally convert into your sleep hormones, starting with pregnenolone, you know, our mother hormone. But if your hormones are all converting over into cortisol instead, and your body doesn't have the building blocks of what it needs to make your sleep hormones, you can kind of see how everything starts to unravel and fall apart. And based on your sex, male or female, and based on your genetics, that will kind of impact how this cascade unfolds for you and what your particular sleep issues look like. So if we can back our thinking up a little bit and think, all right, so this is a cortisol response ultimately, if we're being overly simplistic in how we're thinking about this conversation so we can understand it. We're dealing with this cortisol response. Then what do we need to bake into our life and our lifestyle to support our body in being able to properly manage this load? And that makes it so that we can kind of wrap our heads around this conversation a little bit. Yes. Because there's so many things that create this cortisol response. And some of it is just a really bad lifestyle. Like we are not aligned with Mother Nature and it's creating a lot of stress in and of itself. Some of it's the relationships, our job choices, this trauma that's happened to us in our past that still haunts us to this day. I mean, we can all look at it, but you could probably just jot some notes to yourself of like, where do I think my stress is coming from? And that can really give you some insight into where you need to do your deeper work.
What would you say, just to take that a little bit further, what would you say are some of the sort of the really big factors that you see being stress in people's lives? Like if someone's trying to go, well, what are those factors? I mean, like you mentioned, for example, childhood trauma. So that's definitely an example. Having surgery can be another example. What are some of the other things that people might want to look for?
Challenging relationships, being in relationships and partnerships that ultimately aren't supporting you for whatever reason, without placing any blame in that statement. You know, we all, just like I was saying, I had created a life where I wasn't supported. There is no one to blame for that. I had good people in my life, but I was choosing to interact with them in a certain way, you know? So, you know, there's a lot of ways that can play out. It can be in our really close, intimate relationships if we have partners, you know. It could be the kind of relationships we've created with our children. It can be our professional relationships. It could be relationships with our parents and extended family and all the dynamics that are at play there. All of those things can cause stress. I mean, we're going through it just around the world right now, an unbelievably uncertain time. Uncertainty itself creates a lot of stress for us when we feel out of control of what's happening in our environment. That's very, very stressful. As we're getting older, our bodies change and the way that our bodies respond to our environments change. And then that can bring up a whole nother layer of stress, you know, and then we can just have traumatic life events. We're losing a job. We lose a child. We lose a pregnancy, you know, various ways that loss comes to us creates stress for us. So stress has lots of layers to, I mean, even the good things, like people are actually negatively impacting their sleep because they're working out too much.
Yeah.
Because working out is also stress. So a little bit of stress is good for the body, but too much stress is actually very detrimental. Part of the challenge that I had created for myself right before my surgery is I was running half marathons and had been for years.
Right. Wow.
On top of everything else, you know, and you think that's something good. And I certainly thought I was doing something good for my body. What I didn't realize is how much stress I was adding on top of all the other stress that existed, plus all the historical stress, you know. So, you know, there's this stress thing. None of us are going to get out of here alive without, you know, experiencing stress. But I think the challenge is how do we manage our lives and how do we start making choices differently so that our body isn't overwhelmed by all this stress?
Yes, Yeah. So let's start a change direction a little bit towards some of the things people can start to do to shift what's happening around sleep. And I know one of the things that that you talk a bit about is how one can optimize their bedroom for sleep, like just some of the practical things in their environment that they can do.
Yeah. Well, let's back up one step before the bedroom and let's just talk about, so we were talking about cortisol, right? And stress. If the body is producing cortisol properly and you have what they call a healthy cortisol response, all right? And you did a saliva test to show what that response looked like throughout the day. What you would see is in the morning, cortisol would be at its peak, at its highest level. That's actually what wakes you up refreshed, ideally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then over time, it would go down. And by the end of the day, that cortisol is pretty low. And that's actually what supports your body making all the sleep hormones and going to sleep. So that's how that curve is supposed to look. And one of the things that helps to shape that curve is built into our biology. It's baked into our biology. And you hear, if you've been around the space a lot, the functional medicine space or the biohacking space, you hear a lot about circadian biology, right? So at a cellular level, our cells respond to light cycles. And part of what helps to wake us up in the morning is the light starts to come in, hit our cells, our skin, you know, whatever. And our body's entrained to that. And it's like, okay, this is when our cortisol should be at its peak. And then there's a timed response. The body knows about how long daytime is moving into nighttime. So that really helps to shape that curve. So when we have a lifestyle where we're never in the dark, or we're rarely in the dark, or we're not sleeping in dark rooms, or in the morning, we're staying in a fairly dark space, we're not getting out, letting the sunlight hit our eyes to really help set that proper healthy cortisol response, what happens is we have cortisol spiking at all different times of the day, and trying to re-regulate that without using light is pretty much impossible. And this is why a lot of people will say things like, and my experience was I would get the second wind at 9 p.m. because my cortisol response was so screwed up, and I could have back then gotten rid of all the stress and whatever, but I have to reset this healthy response. So we can reset our sleep response first thing in the morning. And that's a really important thing for us to know. And it's actually something that I did when I had to reset my 2 a.m. to 10 a.m. sleep cycle back to about 9:30 p.m. to 6:30, you know, a.m. So that's a biggie. And along that train of thought, we've got to start being disciplined about dusk and dark. When it goes dark outside, we need to be mindful of how our body responds to light and dark. There are sensors in our eyes, right through our retina, hits our SDN, which is the body's master clock to control timing everywhere, blue light. There are blue light sensors. Same with our blood cells that are running through our skin. So we've got in our blood, there's like little sensors that control melatonin. And that's really what this blue light thing is all about. It controls the production of melatonin in the body. So when it goes dark, put those amber glasses on. In my home, we don't do any overhead lighting. We have amber bulbs in many of the lamps in the house. And we just do our best to keep lighting low, use the amber lights, wear the glasses. And then when it's time to go to sleep, now we're moving into the bedroom, sleep in a very dark room. So we have room darkening curtains. And I remember when I first heard Dr. Ann Shippey talk about the fact that our skin has sensors, because I've been doing the amber glasses since 2012. I had no idea that our skin was sensitive in that way. Or I remember hearing something about it, but not understanding the mechanism. So I immediately was like, oh crap, you know, we're doing all these other things.
Like, come on, I've been wearing the glasses. Is that not enough?
I need amber glasses for my skin. So we put the room darkening curtains up, and then it's like amazing how much light you have in your room. We had the smoke detector light. There was something plugged into the desk across the way that even though it's off has a light on it. My curling irons in the bathroom are off, but there's still lights on it. So you kind of have to do this exercise of like making everything dark, getting out the black tape if you need it to tape over lights. So make your room dark is really, really huge. Being disciplined about screen time, You know, no screen time 3 hours before bed is a really great rule of thumb for a few reasons. Number one, of course, we know that just biologically it's important. But beyond just the biology of it, we want to be, after, say, 6 or 7 p.m., moving into a time of, like, no stress. We don't want to be doing things that amp up our cortisol stress response. So getting into a fight with your partner, working late at night, watching the news, which, you know, can be a lot of doom and gloom, and you've got anchors who are trying to get everybody revved up because they're wanting those eyeballs, you know. All of that stuff is contrary to your outcome of creating good sleep. So we need to start developing these routines at night. And how do we kind of ease ourselves into being able to go to bed? It's amazing what the amber glasses alone will do. I actually have a friend who just moved here from California. She's staying in my guest room for a couple of months while she gets her feet under her. And now she has a pair of amber glasses. And she said just last night, we were playing cards. It was about 8:30 p.m. And she was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how these things just make you tired. And it was her third, night. And it really does have that significant and profound of an effect on your body. It really helps you start moving into what you should be moving into whenever it's nighttime. So that's a big one. Another one that can be really helpful is making sure that you are cooling your room at night. You know, they say the best temperature for us to sleep at is probably 65 degrees. And for a lot of us, that's going to be really challenging. How do you actually get your house, your entire house would have to be that cold? I mean, most of us don't have thermostats only for our bedroom, you know?
I mean, it's not challenging in the UK in winter, just to be clear.
right. So, and that is true. It depends on the time of year for sure. But, you know, for me, you know, have the thermostat down probably around 70 degrees. I wish I could do the translation for you into what it is across the metric system too, but Celsius. But for us, it's 70 degrees. And then I also have a chili pad on my bed, which, you know, throughout the night cools my body even more. And why that's important is because the cooler your body is, the more melatonin you produce, the better your deep sleep. So a lot of these biohacks that really work for sleep, it's really all about melatonin and how much melatonin you have in your body. Some people do have genetic SNPs to produce less melatonin, and that's why taking melatonin can be really important for some people when these basic lifestyle hacks are not enough.
And I think it's also really what you're doing is you're recreating the environment that our ancestors slept in for millennia, which was dark. And it was cold.
Yep.
And they were, you know, when it got dark and cold, it was less safe to go out foraging and to go out hunting. So people would sleep and they would be out in the world when there was daylight. So you're really trying to recreate that in a modern world.
Yeah. You know, there's people, I've gotten a gazillion emails by now about this whole sleep topic there. And there's women in the Healing Rosie community who've offered a lot of feedback too. You can get portable air conditioners that you can put just in your room so that you're not cooling your entire house, you know? So there's different, people find all sorts of creative ways to make this happen. The great thing about a chili pad is, you know, if you and your partner don't like it to be the same temperature necessarily at night, then you can regulate that. Yeah. The way that the chili pad is set up, you know, allows you to regulate each side of the bed.
Yeah, my wife and I have different duvets. In the winter, because it's like she gets really cold and needs a warm duvet, whereas I have a much thinner duvet. And it's a sort of, we have a joke by the fact that we're like, we share a bed, but we don't share a duvet.
That's right. You know, and that's for a lot of women what ends up happening. And this was happening for me. I actually just did a hormone adjustment myself because I'm dealing with just sleeping hot, you know. And if I weren't on bioidentical hormone therapy, this is me personally, which my hormones crashed because of the mercury toxicity. If I weren't on that therapy, I would be in full blown menopause. At the time of this recording, I'm 44 years old. I was showing premature ovarian failure at 38 because of what happened to me. So I would be in full blown menopause. Instead, now I have to figure out how to regulate my hormones. So I'm figuring out over a very, very long period of time, I experience what women experience typically in a shorter period of time because they just move on through it. I've experienced the sleeping hot, the night sweats. I mean, it's miserable. It's absolutely miserable for women as you're going through these changes. So besides advocating hormone therapy, and I think all women should be on top of their hormones and optimizing their hormones because it dramatically impacts your quality of life and your longevity. I mean, we deal with things like osteoporosis and losing bone mass, and there's just terrible things that happen to us. But women really, really need their hormones to sleep well. So your wife is cold now. There might be a time that she's the one sleeping hot, you know?
Yeah.
But it's good that we're having these conversations because no matter where you're falling on that spectrum, there's things that you can do really to help regulate this so that you're getting great sleep. For me, I started sleeping hot again, and I just actually went in and changed my the form of estrogen I'm taking, and it made a massive difference in how I sleep at night. So the cold can be a big help. Another thing that can actually help, taking warm baths actually cools your body temperature. You're warm in the bath, but when you get out, your body temperature tends to dip. That can be really helpful if you need a system to help move you in to sleeping. Taking baths can be helpful. The thing that I did when I was resetting my clock, which was very hard, it took 6 months to reset my sleep clock. I started taking cold baths, 65 degree water at night in the evening. I didn't do it for sleep benefits. I was doing it just for the mitochondrial benefits overall that I had heard that you get from doing cold baths. And I was really trying to support my body in healing at this time. 2 weeks in, suddenly I started waking up like not feeling like I'd been hit by a Mack truck and exhausted. So that was a surprise for me, but I was not alone in my experience. Many people that I was in community with at the time were noticing similar positive effects to their sleep as well. So that can be another thing that, you know, if you're really committed to supporting your body and dialing this in, you know, you could do the cold baths.
And sometimes transitioning between hot and cold or cold and hot can also be a good thing.
That's right. Any of those actually are really good for the body. So anyway, so cold can be great in the room and dark is great in the room. Some people swear by it being completely dead silent. And some people can't sleep, you know, I think
yeah,
you have to
be tortured. It's too quiet.
Right. I think you have to kind of find what's going to work for you. But it certainly makes a big difference how your room is set up, you know, and in my house, the most important thing for us to spend money on is improving our sleep. Right. Like I just won't spare any expense because I've tried so long for my body to heal, trying different protocols and struggling, spinning my wheels. And I learned, like, with a lot of wasted time and money, that if I'm not sleeping, I'm not healing. It doesn't matter how much I'm spending on these protocols and working with the very best doctors. It doesn't matter. If your body's not sleeping, nothing else will work. So I just feel like it's the most important thing for all of us to invest in.
So I think that's some really helpful practical advice around some of the kind of circadian rhythm pieces and sort of how to manage the sleep environment. We sort of touched on, and just to maybe explore a little bit more, you've mentioned hormones, you've mentioned briefly heavy metals. Maybe just say a bit about the kind of the functional medicine piece and even just some of the basics like balancing blood sugar and just making sure that people are supporting their body in that way.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The blood sugar one is an interesting one. You know, for so long, that hasn't been my personal issue because I've really adopted a kind of a paleo lifestyle. Certainly, there's a lot of ways to go about being healthy. Some people find a more Mediterranean template works for them. The universal truths are, though, regardless of where you fall ultimately on the diet spectrum, getting rid of processed food, getting rid of sugar is really crucial for good health as we get older, not only for our sleep, but, you know, for diabetes and, you know, all of the other chronic diseases of aging that we're getting, fatty liver disease. And I mean, there's just so much that crops up when we don't have healthy lifestyles when it comes to our food. So that's a really important one. You know, if someone hasn't dialed in their diet and they haven't really given that part of their life the attention it needs, it's going to have a detrimental effect on their sleep. And what ends up happening with blood sugar in particular is that when your blood sugar is swinging wildly, when it's going way up, it's also going to go way down.
Yes.
And that often happens for people in the middle of the night. So if they ate a big meal at dinner time and their blood sugar went way up, it's like your body loses its ability to properly regulate. Too much sugar just like floods the system. You're not as insulin sensitive anymore. These, you know, controls that the body has of keeping all of this in check, it's like the circuits are blown. And so, yeah, blood sugar is a big one. And if your blood sugar is dipping at night, it's going to wake you up. Yeah. And for some people, that's just a wake up and go back to bed and it's not a big deal for them. But for other people, the wake up, you know, it's your body's actually kicking, what's waking you up is cortisol. The cortisol response is kicking in. And for some people, their bodies, because they're not regulating these responses well, that cortisol response is a surge, you know? And then once you have that surge and that cortisol is in your system, you know, it overtakes the body, just like what happened to me after my surgery with all that cortisol, and you're not able to go back to sleep again. So blood sugar is a big one for sleep. For women, the hormones are really significant. If we don't have enough progesterone, it affects our sleep. If we're not getting enough estrogen, it affects our sleep. A woman's biology is way more sensitive hormonally than a man's because we're the perpetuators of the species. So our biology is more sensitive to the environment. It's more sensitive to the light stuff. You know, it's more sensitive to darkness. It's more like everything for women is more. So if we don't have enough hormones in our body, like it deeply affects us. Whereas, you know, for men in the research that I've done and these experts I've talked to, it's not very often that with a man, the remedy is going to be you need a little more progesterone to be able to sleep, you know? That does not come up for men, but yeah, it absolutely does a lot for women. So there's ways that you can support your hormone. Just reducing stress supports your hormones, yeah, just like we were talking about earlier. And so for some women, they just have overly stressful lives that are impacting their hormone production and therefore impacting their ability to sleep at night.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to go after it from that perspective, but you could be someone like me, like you just have chronically low hormones and your body needs hormonal support. And in that case, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy is wonderful. And, you know, certainly there's some supplementing that you can do that really helps with hormones. Evening primrose oil is great. Chasteberry, there's all these different supplements that can help your body if you're subclinical, meaning just slightly low. But with what I'm seeing in the Healing Rosy community, especially thousands and thousands of women, and we have these conversations all the time, if you have a significant dip in your hormone levels, you really need to consider supplementing, because bioidentical hormone replacement, because supplements alone typically won't get you where you need to be. And then what does that mean? That means you're not sleeping. And then if you're not sleeping, it means you're not healing. Like it
becomes a vicious circle.
This thing that happens. That's right. And there's some really interesting thing too. One of the things that was fascinating to me is talking to different experts in our space about how to get to sleep. And I want to mention a few of these people and I'll tell you a little bit about them. And so, you know, if you're listening and this sounds like you, I want you to feel like you have someone you can go to. Trudy Scott is excellent. I believe she's going to be on the summit. Yeah. But she did an excellent presentation on anxiety, how anxiety keeps you from sleeping and how you can use amino acids like 5-HTP. She talked a little bit about melatonin in our interview too. But these different amino acids to support your body in sleeping. And I have heard directly from people who are applying what she's teaching and their testimonials are like, this is changing my life. So she's amazing. And there's so many great things you can do with amino acids alongside melatonin. But people's bodies are different and that's where we just have to keep our mind open. Some people can just take melatonin and it works, but other people, the melatonin doesn't work so much for them, but the precursors to melatonin really seem to work better. And you just have to be open-minded about trying different things till you find what works for you. I did an excellent interview with Dr. Roger Murphy, who his patient group is autoimmunity and fibromyalgia patients. And he has an entire protocol that he uses with his fibro patients. And his perspective is, it doesn't matter what else we do to try to help you with your fibro symptoms. If I can't get you sleeping, nothing else is going to work. So it's his very first protocol that he puts every single one of his patients on. He basically has a requirement to go deeper. We have to get you sleeping. So he has an excellent protocol. Both of these guys have great books, you know, of their work, and they have excellent websites where you can find lots of this information, but he's got a really great protocol. I had a wonderful conversation with Dr. Christine Schaffner, and she talked a lot about the glymphatic system, which I think we should mention here as we're wrapping up, because the glymphatic system is actually a new system of the body that has emerged since 2015. That is the brain's system for detoxifying. So our body has the lymphatic system, and we all, you know, probably have heard of lymph in our lymphatic system. Well, the brain has a system called the glymphatic system that supports the brain in draining all the toxins that are produced by the drain, and that gets drained right into our lymphatic system and then out the body. If people are experiencing chronic brain fog, where they've got this brain fog they just can't shake, and you've looked at the obvious things like thyroid and, you know, hormones, different things like that, and it's just, you're just not getting any relief, it's likely related to your glymphatic system. And when people aren't sleeping, when their body is designed to get deep sleep, which is the first half of your sleep, when you're not sleeping in your genetic window, then your brain doesn't drain, because the brain drains during deep sleep. And over time, this creates this chronic brain fog that people are feeling. So the glymphatic system is obviously, you know, very significant. So in Christine's work, she really pushes melatonin, and melatonin can be kind of a controversial thing. Like, we don't know if you take melatonin, are you suppressing your body's ability to produce its own melatonin in the future? And where she comes, which really resonates for me too, as a specialist, is it doesn't matter about the future. If in this moment you don't have enough, you are compromising, and this is jeopardizing your future, whatever it looks like. There is nothing more important than making sure that you're getting good sleep now, right, to heal and reclaim your body. So she's a huge proponent of melatonin, and she uses this therapy a lot in her work with patients, because so many of them have the brain fog, issues with the glymphatic system. Melatonin can be just a total game changer. So, and I did touch a little bit on genetics. I learned some really interesting stuff from Dr. Michelle Sands, that there are actually 4 different chronotypes for sleep. And we are actually genetically wired. Some people are wired where they need to go to sleep at like 8 p.m., which to me would be like, oh my gosh, they're wired to be up at like 4.
Right.
You know,
right.
8 to 4 is their body's optimal window. It's how they are wired. If they will align with that, they will have the healthiest body, most productive life. I have a friend who is this type. Since 2016, he has had brain fog that hasn't let up. He did not go to bed until midnight. Huh. But he is designed to go to bed at 8. Wow. So he's getting his deep sleep way after his body, from the circadian stuff, is designed to benefit from that deep sleep and align with it to do all the hormonal stuff and the brain draining and all the things that need to happen. So knowing your chronotype is very significant. The next type, there's a couple of them, but it's the typical 10 to 6. But then you also have delayed onset. And that type is like a 1 a.m. chronotype, which I wish was me, because
that's when,
yes. But you know, for that person, they sleep until 9-10 o'clock, you know, but they're designed to go to bed later. So knowing your own chronotype through your genetics, Dr. Michelle Sands is the one that introduced me to this. She talks about this a lot, and so does Dr. Michael Bruce. Knowing what your chronotype is can really help you dial this piece in. 80% of us are going to be in that mid-range.
Right.
But you're going to have your outliers on either side that are wired a little differently. But that's hugely significant if sleep is a challenge for you, or healing is a challenge. If you're just like, why am I not healing like I should be? You know, this healing protocol was supposed to take me 10 miles down the road. I've gone the 8 weeks, and I'm like half a mile from where I started. Hardly any noticeable improvements. Well, then you have to start asking why. Like, why isn't the body able to capitalize on what you're doing? And for the majority of us, it's an energy issue, and it always ties back in some way to our sleep.
Yeah. Misty, there's so much. I mean, you've just done an amazing summit, and there's so much more we could go into here.
But I know.
I'm mindful of time. I think that's a great kind of, I love how you've given a sort of summary of some of the kind of the best infusion. And that's a really helpful piece of people. People that want to find out more about you and your work, what's the best way to do that?
Just go to the website, healingrosie.com, and that'll connect you to social media profiles. And we've got a thriving Facebook group for women called Healing Rosie, and lots of free downloads and tools and resources to help you advocate for yourself and really take on this health journey and move the needle. So yeah. healingrosie.com.
That's awesome. Misty, thank you so much.
Thank you, Alex, for having me. It's been a pleasure.